This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat. Our first in a little break. I promise we weren't going to go on another 6 month hiatus like we have been known to do before, but we are back and continuing on with our player position rankings as we approach opening day, just a few weeks away at this point, with spring training more than a week old at this point. But I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. And as always, I am joined by Trey, who I have been so fortunate to do these player rankings with. You can follow him on Twitter at reverse two R's two S's, and of course check out all of his work over on our YouTube page at Half Street High Heat, or I guess it's youtube.com/Half Street High Heat. But Trey, what's going on?
It's going pretty good. I actually don't even know what the link is anymore, because YouTube like added ats now, like usernames. So it's all over the place, man. I gotta figure that out, but
I wonder.
Other than that, you know, doing pretty good. Watching some spring training baseball action. WBC coming up soon. I'm feeling good. Baseball's almost back.
I keep forgetting the World Baseball Classic is this year is coming up.
I got to keep mentioning it as much as possible, because it's going to be some awesome competition, despite the fact that some of the guys have had to pull out because of injuries or injury concerns or just wanting to start with their team or whatever.
Right.
But there's still going to be a lot of really good players, and it should be fun.
Update: youtube.com/Half Street High Heat does not work.
Okay. So,
I guess Go to youtube.com and search Half Street High Heat, and that'll probably get you where you're trying to go.
Yeah. We'll have to fix the link, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. But if you follow us on Twitter, as you should, it's in our link tree. You know, we're posting videos all the time, so it shouldn't be too difficult to find. But yeah, we're continuing on with our position rankings today. We have some catching up to do, especially if we want to get this done by opening day, which of course we want to. But yeah, so we are going to continue on with our player rankings series today as we tackle shortstops. You know, we have talked about this through our first three or four episodes regarding the position rankings that we've done, shortstop and third base, which will be the next episode as well, or the next episode in the series. Very deep, very top heavy, but the depth is still very good. Like, you have some absolute superstars at the top of these lists, and to the point where it's really interchangeable and you kind of just go with your gut. And I don't think there's really a wrong answer with one or two or three. I mean, there is a wrong answer, but if you pick within those five, six guys, there isn't a wrong answer. So it'll be a good discussion. It's a loaded position, and obviously we'll see some familiar faces or faces that we're accustomed to seeing at the top of these lists, especially at shortstop. But let's just, you know, let's get the show on the road. let's get right after it. Mainly because what I just mentioned, familiar faces, or in this case, a familiar face, coming in at number one on our list is Trey Turner. And before I, like, I dive into the numbers, the reason why we all have him, or like why he was ranked first overall, is looking back on Trey Turner, you know, as a Nat, obviously, you know, he's since gone to LA. Now he's with Philly, which is just, you know, phenomenal. It's cool to see how he's developed. And I don't want to get into this whole Nationals developing players, because I know some people will take that and run with it, be like, oh, I thought you said the Nats don't develop players. Well, they don't really. But Trey, one, is a generational talent. So he kind of is in his own, you know, stratosphere, so to speak. But when he first came up, everyone was like, oh, is he going to be able to be a leadoff hitter? Granted, he made his debut at like age 22. So he was just young and, you know, didn't have enough seasoning. He was like, is he going to be a leadoff hitter? Well, then he started cutting down his K percentage and upping his walk percentage, and, you know, it all ended up fine. And then they're like, oh, well, he's walking now, but he's never going to hit for power. And then you look at the last couple of years and he's now hitting for power as well. Like, he's not hitting 40 plus bombs, but if you're hitting 20 to 30 bombs as a shortstop, like, that's really, really good. Not to mention all the other things he does so well. So to me, like, I always thought Trey Turner could be the best shortstop in baseball, even though it was a loaded position. He just wasn't there yet because it didn't fully come together. And I know, I think it was prior to 2019, there was one year we did our season predictions. Speaking of season predictions, check out the YouTube channel. Trey just put out our season predictions. But there's one season predictions where Ryan actually predicted Trey Turner to win MVP. And, like, at the time, it was a hot take. But now you kind of see how it could all come together for Trey Turner, because he just does everything so well. Like, he might not be the best defensive shortstop, but his defense has really improved. I mentioned his power improving, and, like, all of the things that we had questions about early on in his career, he's really alleviated. And to me, like, I didn't really have a tough time putting him at one in a loaded position, because I'm obviously still a huge Trey Turner fan, but also just a believer. Like, he is just really good. Like, he's 86th percentile in exit velocity, you know, 89th percentile in expected batting average. Obviously, you know, he's one of the fastest guys in the league too, which contributes to his base running and, you know, just all that stuff. But again, I just think he does so many things so well that in my mind, he's 100% the best shortstop in baseball.
Yeah, you know, for me, I definitely think I also put him at number one on my list. So I'm in agreement with you. I think he's going to be the best this year. I think you could probably interchange the top three, four, even five guys and still have a decent number one. So, but yeah, no, everything you said is right. I think what was going on with Turner was he was starting to become that player right before the trade happened. And then he got traded, and then I remember actually specifically on a Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, him mentioning that he was, the reason his defense was suffering was simply position-based, and that he was using the analytics, obviously, from going from the dinosaur organization to the Dodgers is a big difference. So you learn a little bit more with all the data they had. So, and he had a very solid defensive season. And also the new rules are going to come into effect for Trey Turner, to potentially rip 40 bags. So he has an even bigger advantage, I think, over the other guys, because he already has elite speed. He's not the fastest anymore, though. He's not the fastest anymore.
No, but he's still,
unfortunately, he has been usurped by Corbin Carroll, and that dude is absolutely crazy on the base path. But he's still going to be able to, if he wants 40 bases, he's got it. I mean, it's that simple. And, you know, going from Dodger Stadium to the bank, that'll be nice for him too. He's always hit well there, and he'll have half his games at a hitter friendly ballpark. So you could see, he only had 21 homers last year. You could see him potentially reaching 30. So as long as he continues to play how he's been playing, he's going to be one of the top three shortstops for a while.
Yeah, And like, that was the thing in a conversation we had frequently while he was still a member of the Nats. Like, do you pay him because if his speed goes, is he still going to be valuable? Well, Trey's realized that too. And he's, you know, doing more to his game than just being a one trick pony, you know, fast guy in the base paths. So it feels like the Phillies got another.
I know. It's like every time I think about him, I'm just like, oh my God, he's on the Phillies.
Yeah.
It it's like the realization hits me. I'm like, oh God, we have to freaking play him. And then the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brutal.
I was just looking at something. I love Baseball Savant.
Absolutely. Like,
there are just so many cool things you can do.
You can just look at a new thing whenever you want.
Yeah, so I was just like looking at expected home run by Park. But anyways, yeah, Trey Turner is going to be very, very good next year and the year after that and the year after that and probably for the foreseeable future, unfortunately. But at least we have CJ Abrams. It would suck if we had like Alcides Escobar again.
Yeah, I know. At least Abrams has – I'm super excited for him too, so –
yeah,
maybe he'll be on this list one day soon. How about that?
Honestly, like he's looked really good this spring. So if yep, he can,
I mean, he's so smooth. Like he looks like he's been playing short for 3 months already, and it's like five games. So
it sounds so silly, but he looks like he's in midseason form.
Yes.
Don't you dare say best shape of his life, because I will end this show right now.
No, I'm one to go for the midseason form. That's definitely my go-to as well.
Best shape of your life. Shut up. All right, moving on. Next guy on our list. Another NL East opponent, and that is Francisco Lindor. I've had like, it's not like a love-hate relationship because I've never been his biggest fan, but I've never been his biggest hater either. Like Lindor's just, he's existed to me. But, you know, his first year in New York, I wasn't sure he would ever, you know, be worth that contract because they paid him pretty quickly after the deal.
At the time, it seemed like a lot.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Like Trey Turner and Xander Bogaerts good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's and crazy. I don't know if this is a hot take. I don't think he's ever going to win MVP. I don't know that he'll ever be top three. He could, but I don't know that he will. But he's just really well-rounded. And now that the Mets are better and they've built around him, and obviously Steve Cohen's a huge part of that, like, it obviously, if you have protection, whether it be in the field or in the lineup or whatever, you're going to look better. And I think that's what's happening to Francisco Lindor because, you know, he was the bright spot of those Cleveland teams. But those Cleveland teams, like, they got the most out of what they had, but they didn't have like a super high floor either, in my opinion. Like it was a safe floor, but it wasn't like a super high floor. Whereas now you have, you know, Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo and like everyone in that Mets lineup, and who knows who they're going to add as well. Jeff McNeil as well. Like they, you know, he just has so much protection that he's not getting pitched around and he's not trying to do too much either because he can just be a guy at times, and he doesn't always have to be the guy. So with Francisco Lindor, his numbers aren't eye-popping, but again, I think he's super well-rounded. He has power. He has some speed. He plays good defense. And like that's kind of what you're looking at shortstop, especially at the top of this list. There's going to be guys that have absurd power, but they might not play the best defense, or vice versa. There might be guys that play really, really solid defense, but their numbers offensively are just like okay. Whereas Francisco Lindor, he kind of does it all. He might not be the best at any single one thing, but he's super well-rounded, and like there's a reason why he got 10 years, $300 million, or whatever that contract was.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, man. I think he is the best at one thing. I think he's the best defensive shortstop in baseball over the last 5 years.
Really? Oh, well, I mean, if you're going to go over the last 5 years, but
last right season, now, maybe not. But yeah,
well, that's what I mean. Like, if I'm going a larger sample size, then yes. But I think now, especially, there's guys that are definitely better defensively than him.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna find out this year without the shifts. Right. Lindor himself was quoted as saying that he's a big fan of it because he wants to go out and make those plays. So really excited to see that because he's unbelievable. But yeah, like you said, I feel like it was just a lot more. He played a lot more free and easy this year without as much on his shoulders expectation wise. I mean, it could have just been the fact that he was in his second year and we have that second year thing going on. Wait, was he there in 2020? That doesn't really count, though. Whatever. Yeah. I'm just going to, for narrative ball's sake, I'm going to say it was his second year, even if it wasn't. So
no, he was in Cleveland in 2020.
Okay, so I was right. You know, we've seen that happen where it just takes them a season to get comfortable, learn their new squad and how they're going to play there. And but yeah, like you said, there's definitely more of a lineup around him to take that pressure off as well. So he was excellent last season. Like you also said, he's very well-rounded. That's obviously true as well. So he's been this guy pretty much every year except for that 2021 first year at the Mets. So this is pretty much the player he is, and that's a top three shortstop in the game.
Yeah, and I like we talk about, or I guess it was mainly me, but like we talk about 2021 as like this horrible year. In reality, like he was still solid.
It's the same thing with like
He wasn't Francisco Lindor level.
Yeah, I mean we'll get to Juan Soto eventually, but it's the same thing. It's like he had a down year last year, but his down year is insane.
75% of the exactly. league, at least. Yeah. So Lindor, he obviously bounced back. I think he's going to have a very similar year this year as he did last year, and that's like a 7 WAR season.
Yeah, so, not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. So Francisco Lindor coming in at number two on this list. Number three is a guy that Francisco Lindor was almost teammates with, and that is Carlos Correa. I mean, Carlos Correa was almost teammates with a lot of different people.
I know, right? It's like everyone in the league.
But ultimately, went back to Minnesota. I love that deal for the Twins. I know it was a long-winded way of getting there, but I love that they were just like, screw it, we'll pay you. We don't care. Like, we need a guy. We like you. You were around last year. You know how we do business. We know who we have in you. Like, let's go to work. So I love that deal for both sides. Again, a long-winded way of getting there. But, you know, when you look at Carlos Correa, it was basically everything I said for Lindor, but for Correa. Super well-rounded. He might, like on paper, might not do anything the best, but he is honestly the most well-rounded shortstop in baseball, in my opinion, because he does everything. Let me back up. He's very well-rounded, but I also think he's like the most clutch shortstop in baseball. Like when you need a big play, he's there. When you need a big hit, he's there. Like he's not, maybe not the most consistent or like the most consistent at a high level, but like he's clutch. Like you look at his, you know, playoff performances and all those years with Houston and what he was able to do. Like, I mean, I'm going to pull up his stats really quick from, what was it? 2019 that year or 2020? He had an insane postseason.
I feel like 17, he was nuts. And 19, he was nuts. And
yeah, it was 17. Like 17 was exactly the one I was thinking of. Yeah, but anyway, so the fact that I was having to search just proves my point. No, it was actually 2020. Because I remember now because it was the expanded playoffs. He had like three or four home runs that opening series against like the White Sox or the A's, or
you know what, I wouldn't have come to 2020 because I was thinking about his season then was he like didn't have a great 2020 season.
Yeah, but then he went off in the playoffs.
But yeah, so that makes
sense. But this just proves my point. Like we had to search through his multiple good postseason runs to figure out the one I was even talking about. But yeah, like I think Carlos Correa, as much of a bad rap as he gets for just having a super punchable face and playing in Houston and all of his like antics is a bad word, but like if he's not on your team, you hate him. Like he's one of those players, but if he's on your team, you're gonna root for him. And I think baseball needs good heels. Like they need players that are hateable to 30 or 29 other fan bases. And Carlos Correa is that. But I respect that because I think he's good for baseball, but also like his play backs it up. He's never gonna he's probably not going to win an MVP, probably not going to be top five, but that's because he's just so well-rounded, and the MVP is an offensive award. So, you know, people are going to point to that for, I don't know if he's going to be consistent enough to make the Hall of Fame, but like that is going to be a knock on his resume that, you know, he never won an MVP or anything like that, but he's just so well-rounded, like that shouldn't count against him either. So he's number three. And if anyone wanted to put him at number one, I would have no problem with it.
Yeah, that was it. Like exactly what I was saying at the beginning. It's just like any of these guys could be number one, but the only real reason I put Correa down below Turner and Lindor was just the stolen base factor. And if you want to point out anything negative, the ankle situation.
That's fair. Yeah, we can get into that.
We don't know we don't know the extent of that injury or what was going on really with that whole thing, but that is something to keep in the back of your mind as the season progresses. But having said that, he's still ridiculous. So everything Nick said was right. The clutch factor is super important. He might actually be the best hitting shortstop now that Tatis has moved on to the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
He walks at over a 10% clip, which I definitely like. And he absolutely crushes the baseball. So really, the only thing last season that was missing was the elite defense. He was still good, but yeah. normally he's even better. So now that he's situated with the Twins, he could have that second year pop off like we've been seeing with a lot of guys,
mm-hmm.
and have a big season this season. So that's a great signing for the Twins. It keeps them competitive in that division as long as they can stay healthy. Him and Buxton, please, just once.
Yeah.
I want to see Byron Buxton play a full season at this level, because we'll get to him, I'm sure, at some point too. But yeah, Correa is great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
I do have to kind of retcon something I said. Correa did have a top five MVP finish in 2021. I kind of forgot how good he was in 2021. So I have to retcon that, but I still don't think he'll ever win one, but that's not to say he isn't a good player. Like, he's super well-rounded, but the ankle is something to monitor. 'Cause if that's going to be a lingering thing, which it seems like it is, then, you know, does he move to second? 'Cause Jorge Polanco can play short. So, like, is that something? Probably not, because of how much they're paying him. But, like, you know, down the line, is that something that, or does he DH, or, you know, who knows? But it's something to monitor. And you mentioned the stolen base things. His rookie year, 2015, he went 14 of 18 stolen bases. 2016, his sophomore year, he went 13 of 16. You want to guess how many stolen base attempts he has since 2016, which is 5.5 years? Attempts.
Attempts, the way you're framing it, it's probably not a lot, so I'll go low. Let's go with 30.
Way too high.
Really?
Eight stolen base attempts.
That's like six seasons.
5.5 years. Yep. 5.5 seasons, because obviously 2020 was short. Five and a half seasons. Eight stolen That's base crazy. Attempts. Yeah, he didn't have any in 2020, none in 2021, and was 0-for-1 last year.
Yeah, I
mean, that might be the last stolen base attempt of Carlos Correa's career.
Hey, if it helps keep that ankle healthy, yeah. It's not something he needs to do. So,
yeah,
if that's the solution, then so be it.
So be it. All right, moving on. You mentioned Fernando Tatis, and while we're not talking about him, we are talking about his new teammate, a guy I've been really high on for years. I know Ryan, who isn't here, has been really high on for years, and that's Xander Bogaerts. You want to talk about the best hitting shortstops in baseball? I think this guy firmly belongs in the discussion, because that's honestly what he's done so well to this point. Like, his defense was never all that great. It was better last year, but it still, like, was not all that great, to the point where, you know, talks amongst Red Sox pundits and maybe within the organization is, would they have to move Bogaerts away from shortstop? And he was better now, and obviously the Padres are slating him to be their everyday shortstop for the next 12 years or whatever, you know, that contract is, in moving away Tatis from shortstop. So he's good enough defensively, but his offense is certainly what carries him. Like, last year was, it sounds so silly, a down year by his standards. 15 home runs, 84 RBIs, and but he still hit over 300, still had a OPS above 800. But I think when I think Xander Bogaerts, I think 2019, whether that's fair or not, sue me. But he had he had 73 RBIs last year, not 84 runs. But 2019, he had 33 home runs and 117 RBIs. Yes, I know that was juice baseballs. I don't care. Like, Xander Bogaerts has like always been one of my favorite players to watch. And I think the Red Sox did him dirty in like the contract negotiations, like, trying to gaslight him into signing a deal that was way beneath him. And I'm happy that he got paid, and it's cool that I was by the Padres too, because he deserves, obviously he's a World Series champion, so I'm not going to feel too bad for him. And he's a, you know, a millionaire, so also not going to feel bad for him, but like, I'm happy that he gets to succeed with a team that's ready to compete right now. And he didn't have to go to, no disrespect to Carlos Correa or the Twins, but he didn't have to go to a team like the Twins that is constantly hoping they just make the playoffs. Like, he actually got to go to a legitimate contender and continue on. Because again, I think he belongs in that conversation of the best hitting shortstops in baseball. And now he gets the protection that he had back in Boston, you know, in the late 2010s. But now, obviously, with the Padres and that insane lineup they have with Machado and Tatis and Soto and all those guys, that it's just an embarrassment of riches over there. But what are your thoughts on Xander Bogaerts?
Xander Bogaerts is the epitome of consistency. Throughout the last five seasons, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get 130 to 140 WRC plus. You're going to get 4-6 WAR. You're going to get an incredible bat in your lineup.
Yep.
And he's probably going to hit 300. He's probably going to slug 500. And that's like every season for the past like 5 years. So he might not peak to the heights of some other guys, but I'm taking that consistency any day, because you know what you're going to get. You know how to build around it. And so, yes, yeah, Xander Bogaerts is an incredible player. If there's one slight thing you could say, is just that he's not going to have the monster anymore. And he liked to hit the ball off the monster, and he liked to hit the ball over the monster. But I don't really think that's going to be a problem, because he also hits for average. So it's one of those things where it's pretty much just going to be, will the defense hold at shortstop for a while, because he's on a long-term contract. Obviously they could end up moving him, but they can't really move him to third base because they just signed Manny Machado to like a 20-year contract.
Everyone is signed till 40. You play for the Padres, you're signed till you're 40.
Yeah, I mean,
you, Darvish, Fernando Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado, all signed. Yeah. Juan Soto probably next, unfortunately. All signed till they're 40.
I'm thinking about, even if they don't retain Soto, that team is still going to be a competitive squad for years.
It's so insane how they could lose Soto and not miss him. Like, miss him to an extent, but not as much as like 29 other teams would miss Soto.
Not, if they lost him. Exactly. So that team's nuts. He's nuts. That should be just such a fun lineup to watch throughout this season.
Yeah. Absolutely. Moving on to round out our top five is guy. I have a scorching, I don't know if it's scorching. I have a medium hot take. Like, if you, you know, your stovetop burner is 1-6, this is like a 5. As far as,
all right, hot takes, I got you. Go. I hear you.
Number 5 on our list is Corey Seager. Corey Seager, like Marcus Semien, you know, kind of started slow with his new team, the Texas Rangers, really picked it up. It might not have been to the level that we saw previously, but we mentioned it several times. There's a theme that popped up that we didn't realize: the second year, sophomore year with your new team and really settling in. We saw it from Paul Goldschmidt. We saw it from Nolan Arenado. Like, we saw it from multiple guys who have had like kind of down, for Francisco Lindor, down years with their first year with their new team, but strong years, bounce back year, so to speak, with the second year with that squad. And I think we're in store for that with Corey Seager. So I'll let you handle all the numbers and metrics and all that stuff, and I'll just give you my hot take. Corey Seager, entering his age 29 season, so still in his prime, within the next, I don't know if it'll be this year, screw it, I'm gonna say this year, Corey Seager AL MVP.
Damn. I didn't think you're going that far, but
I think I'm going to refrain. Yeah, I'm gonna say in the next 2 years.
I'm gonna, but I love it though.
He like when he is on, he is as good as anyone in the league.
His ceiling, I agree.
Yeah, that's a better way of phrasing it.
But like his ceiling, he can go up there,
insanely high. Whether he puts it all together, whether he's healthy, health has been the biggest thing the past couple years. But he did play 151 games last year, which is, if you look at that within a like a baseball reference page, so to speak, or for instance, like you see 151. Oh yeah, he missed a couple games here and there, but he wasn't like injured. It wasn't like a 120 or below. You're like, oh, this guy was really injured. But no, 151. You're like, oh, that's still, you know, a large majority of the season. So hopefully the injury concerns are behind him. But yeah, his ceiling is absurd. And his, speaking of postseason performances, his postseason, was that 2020 as well, where he went off and he was like, yeah, because he was,
yeah, he was MVP, he right? was absolutely wild in 2020 playoffs.
Yeah. So his ceiling is, I think, higher than I won't say higher, because, you know, who knows what someone like Trey Turner can do. As high as any shortstop and honestly anyone in the league. Like when he is on, he is on. And I think the second year with his new team will show that.
Yes, I'm 100% with you. I had I believe I had Corey Seager at 3 on my
list.
You
did. You had him very high.
So I'm pretty much I think most people saw last year that he was very unlucky. You can look at the BABIP numbers and see that he had a lower BABIP than he did batting average, which is very rare.
I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, it's funny, because the reason I know it's possible is because of this, and the reason why is because BABIP doesn't account for home runs. So,
oh, that's right. That's right.
Is on any ball in play. In any ball in play. So he had a 242 BABIP. I believe that was the lowest among players who had as many bad bats as he did. So there was some bad luck there. That shift, if you know, a lot of people are debating the shift right now, whether it's going to impact things as much as we think. There, the one batted ball type that will definitely be impacted is the one to right field, in front of the right fielder where the second baseman was there. Mm-hmm. And that Corey Seager,
he's a lefty,
loves to hit the ball right there more than anyone I have ever seen. So that is going to actually legitimately help him a lot. And then other than that, he's an extremely disciplined hitter. He makes good contact. He can hit for average, and he can obviously slug. The defense is passable to the, he had a pretty good year.
Yeah, he was solid
last year. So you're not looking for him to be a gold glover up there, but you're looking for him to be solid. You got Marcus Semien at second base, who is a gold glover. I mean, that middle infield, if you want to talk about reliability, Marcus Semien plays every game, and Corey Seager's got 150 here. So if he can continue with that, and you got that due up the middle, I really like where the Rangers are headed in the future.
Yeah, me too. And like with Corey Seager, the reason why he's going to have staying power, at least for me, within this top five discussion for shortstops, is typically in his career, he's had more doubles than home runs, which is not a bad thing by any means. But last year, in what would certainly be considered a down year for him, he's like, I'm just not going to hit doubles. I'm going to hit home runs. And he had a career high 33 home runs.
Remember that 2020 World Series was, right?
What's that? It was in Globe Life. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
which is now his new home.
He liked it. And he was just like, I like this place.
That man made a business decision.
Yeah.
And
I think it's going to work out for him in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. So Corey Seager rounding out our top five shortstops. All right, let's pause and get a word from our sponsors.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we are back and continuing on with our top 10 shortstops in baseball. And number 6 is a guy I feel like I've been a fan of multiple players within our top 10 for several seasons, but it is a guy I've been high on mainly because his numbers don't look all that wild. You know, someone like a Trey Turner, Francisco Lindor, Corey Seager, who we just talked about, but he's super solid. And I think he's just been underrated his entire career, even at the time of his trade. And now he's really found a home in Milwaukee. And I think he deserves his flowers. That's Willy Adames. Started his career in Tampa, kind of got de facto pushed out because of Wander Franco, who we may or may not talk about here in a little bit. So he was traded to Milwaukee, and I think has really found a home there. In 2021, he was traded after 41 games. With the Rays, he was abysmal in 2021, 625 OPS. After the trade, 99 games with Milwaukee, 886 OPS. That obviously came down a little bit. That was like really high for what he's done in his, you know, short career. This is only his sixth season, but, you know, like he's, again, super underrated in my opinion, can do a lot of different things. Well, 31 home runs last year, 98 RBIs, both career highs for him. His, on base percentage was a little bit down compared to where he normally is in his, you know, has been in his career. He's averaging a 322. He was only at a 298 on base percentage. So you would like to see that come up, but I think part of that is just due to, you know, a more aggressive style at the plate, and obviously hitting more home runs, you're going to walk less if you're taking an aggressive approach at the plate. And obviously, you know, if you have an aggressive approach at the plate, you're going to strike out a little bit more too, which he had a career high in strikeouts last year as well. So I think last year was just him displaying a little bit of versatility, and the sweet spot for him is going to be somewhere in between, where he's walking a little bit more, maybe not 31 home runs again, but, you know, mid 20s, 800 OPS, good defense, competitive team. Like, I think Willy Adames is, I can't say the most underrated shortstop in baseball, but certainly one of them.
Yes, I am. I'm with you on that. Pretty much since he came up as a Ray, he's been underrated.
Mm-hmm. Just two nobody teams, both competitive teams.
But it is bizarre.
Teams because, you wouldn't pay attention to.
Yeah, I know. That's why when I did my predictions, I was like, I cannot forget the Rays. They're there. Right. They're good. They're always good.
And it's like, if you do pay attention to them, it's because of their pitching. Like,
yeah,
not,
no, but
not
that,
because
I mean,
of their lineup.
They got a lineup down there right now. But
oh yeah, for sure. But healthy. I just mean like in years past, you pay attention to the Rays pitching in the bullpen, and you pay attention to the Brewers pitching in their bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think Adames definitely took a more aggressive approach in order to increase his power last season, like you were saying. It definitely showed up in terms of the barrel percentage. He was 90th percentile barrel percentage, and he did hit 31 home runs as a shortstop. He's always been a great defender. So really, you're just looking for him to be consistent throughout the season. I think that was one thing that he could definitely help himself out with, taking more walks, so that when he does have a slump, it doesn't look as bad. Because actually, at the end of the season, he had one of the worst stretches in the last like week of the season. That he had like three hits in eight games. It was bad, and that kind of tanked his numbers towards the end. Actually, they probably would look a lot better without that drop off. But either way, despite the fact that he can go up and down, overall he's still a really good asset to your squad, mm-hmm. and he's an excellent shortstop. So I'm totally cool with him being number six.
Yeah, and I don't want to sugarcoat it. 298 on base percentage is bad. Like,
definitely.
I don't want to overlook that, but I also believe that's not who he is, and he will, like, kind of correct that. Like I was saying, like, the sweet spot is somewhere in between the power and the on base. I think he'll find it, and he's still in his prime. So
yeah, no, it's 27.
Yeah, so
it's crazy.
I think it feels like he's been in the league for 10 years. But
for real,
I think he'll figure it out. So Willy Adames, number six. Moving on to number seven, a guy I also feel is underrated just because he was hurt last year. And if you think back to, was it 2020, where the whole let the kids play bat flip thing kind of really got loud And this guy was at the forefront of it. And that's Tim Anderson of the Chicago White Sox coming in at number 7 on our list. Some people might scratch their heads. I know there's probably bigger names out there. And that's not to say we won't have him on our list. But I think Tim Anderson, you kind of need to pump the brakes if you're dropping him too far in your rankings. Like, he was injured last year and only played in 79 games. But people forget he was still an all-star as, like, you know, wild as the all-star voting can get sometimes. This dude is still very good. And yeah, he's hitting age 30 this year, but that's still considered to be your prime. And I think he will be just fine next year, assuming he's fully healthy. This guy won a batting title back in 2019. He hit .335, consistently has an OPS, you know, low to mid 800s, a little bit down last year, but still .734. There's some guys we were considering for a top 10 whose career high was like a .734. And this is a down year for this guy. You know, this is the Brandon Lau and, you know, other people who we've talked about in our respective top 10s that have been injured. We don't want to overreact and drop them too far. And I firmly feel that way about Tim Anderson. Like, he belongs in the top 10, unquestionably in my mind. Where you put him, that's up to you. Because, again, health matters and availability matters. I'm not trying to say that, but it's not like this guy was necessarily injury prone in his career either. Like, he's been injured some, but when you're playing 162 games in 6 months straight, you're gonna get injured at some point. Like, it just happens. So I'm not going to knock anyone for, you know, being unavailable at times unless it's a persistent recurring thing, but I don't think that's the case with Tim Anderson. And also, whether you can't really quantify this, in it may not be fair to necessarily use in, you know, these rankings, but the hype, the excitement that Tim Anderson brings to the table is better than most. Trey Turner, super boring personality. Sorry, I love Trey Turner to death, but, like, he doesn't really get fired up. He doesn't really have flashy moments, and that's doesn't detract from his game. But, like, Tim Anderson, him getting fired up when he launches a home run, that's cool to me. And, like, you know, that matters. If you can fire up your team, and the Chicago White Sox are the definition of mid. I think their franchise record is 500, like, for the, you know, however many years they've been a squad.
A long, like, time.
If you can fire up your team, your squad, and build excitement, like, that matters to me. It's may not be, like, super important in the grand scheme of things, but it matters, especially, you know, in tiebreakers, and you can't quantify that, like I said. But I think Tim Anderson firmly deserves a spot in the top 10.
So you're going for the intangibles here.
Yeah. That's probably a better way to put it. Like, okay. I think Tim Anderson brings a lot to the table, but it's not like he's a cheerleader either.
Yeah, no, he, like, actually produces.
Yeah, produces and backs up what he talks and what he says and the quote unquote antics he does, like bat flip. Like, you're allowed to do that if you're good, and Tim Anderson's good.
I agree that Tim Anderson is really good, but I think I actually had him bumped off this year.
I was going to say, I don't think you had him on your top 10.
Mainly it was kind of, you know, similar to Brandon Lau, like you said, where he was injured and he'll probably have a bounce back. It's just that the position is way deeper at shortstop than it is at second base. There was just other guys that jumped out to me more. But TA would have been right behind, like, I think he probably would have been 11 or 12 for me. So I still really like his game. He is going to excel in this fast-paced, contact-oriented game we've been seeing so far in spring training. He likes to get on. He doesn't want to wait around for pitches to be seen. Okay, he's just going to get in there and he's going to swing the bat, and he's going to do it pretty effectively, which is going to make for a really fun time this season with all the speed-up rules, because he's just going to get in there and go. And that's going to be fun. Hopefully what his injury doesn't linger. I actually don't know what his injury ended up being. I believe he missed multiple stints with different stuff, if I recall correctly. So hopefully he'll get healthy and be able to bounce back along with that White Sox team. There's a lot of guys who got hurt or underperformed last year. So we just have to see what they got this season. But yeah, even though Tim Anderson would have been off my list, I still really like him as a player, and he could easily be on the list. by this time next year.
Yeah, you were correct. So Tim Anderson in 2022, it was illness, groin, re-aggravation of the groin, finally came back after an extended period of time, and then broke his finger.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was a wrist, but
yeah,
same thing.
This almost is according to foxsports.com. But yeah, so I'm still very high on Tim Anderson. I'm not going to overreact. If it's a repeat of last year, then I'll obviously reevaluate. But in my mind, Tim Anderson is unquestionably better than this next guy. And it's not that this next guy is not good. He's obviously in our top 10 for a reason. But Dansby Swanson comes in at number 8 on our list. I had a hot take earlier. Well, let's go the other opposite direction and have a hot take, but in a negative fashion. I think Dansby Swanson's the most overrated shortstop in baseball. I think the Chicago Cubs made
agreed
a horrible mistake paying him that contract. It was inevitable that he was going to get it because that's what the market demanded. But if I'm the Cubs, I wanted nothing, especially when you have Nico Horner. I didn't make that up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's there.
Okay.
Second base now.
Like, yeah. Yeah, the second base thing threw me off. I was like, they didn't trade him, right? Yeah, especially when you have Nico Horner, who's like, maybe he wouldn't have been top 10 shortstop, but he's more than a serviceable shortstop. I think they made a terrible mistake. Granted, they're going to have great defense up the middle, because that's one thing Dansby Swanson has always done well. He's had a really good defense. But and maybe I'm stuck in 2017 through 2019, where Dansby was like a 7, like I think he had OPSs in the 600s. But he was about like a 700 OPS guy, didn't really hit for power, maybe like 15 home runs and all that stuff. But it's not like he had like a crazy on base percentage. Like, he was there for his defense and he was serviceable offensively, but he's like your 8 or 9 hitter. And then last year, or I guess the past 2 years, like he had really solid years. Like, he upped his home run total to, you know, 27 and 25 and, you know, was knocking on the door of 100 RBIs, and you know, his OPS was like 800 in 2020, but then it was, you know, high 700s in 2021, 2022. So the fact that he did it over, you know, 2.5 seasons, it's a large enough sample size to say like that's who he is now and that's who he's turned into. So maybe he is just a late bloomer, but I still think he's super overrated. I would not put him anywhere close to that top tier. Like, I can admit he plays great defense. I can admit, like, he's a valuable shortstop, but man, I just have a problem putting him ahead of the guys. Maybe it's this way. Maybe in my mind, his ceiling is so much lower than a lot of shortstops. And for that reason, I can't put him above a lot of them, because I think a lot of these guys, especially these young guys, are going to pass him sooner rather than later. And he's just going to be who he's always been, a really good defensive guy and an okay to pretty decent offensive guy.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. But at the end of the day, I think that's totally what they want.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's fine. I wouldn't have done that. It's just me.
That's fair. I also think it's a little different now with no shift. You need that defense. You can't the no stick a guy. You can't crazy. Hide a guy out there at second base or at shortstop or anywhere.
Yeah.
So that is something that teams are definitely factoring in. And Swanson is an elite defender. He can be a guy who can be a league average hitter and still have immense value just because of that. But I don't think last year is the Dansby that you're going to get at the plate. Last year, he was really good at the plate. And that's not something you really say about him going back throughout his career. But I do think he can be a guy who is a league average to slightly above league average hitter and an insanely good defensive shortstop. And that's good enough for right now to be in the top 10. But yeah, in terms of like where he finished last year in WAR, he was like 2nd, and no way is he actually that good. So I think that he should get his flowers. He should be on the list, in my opinion. But you're also absolutely correct in saying that there are guys that are probably going to pass him.
Yeah, like, he's going to be the first one off my list next year.
If he doesn't
continue offensively the way he did in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, if he continues to hit like this, you really can't fault his game at that point.
But, no, because
I don't think it's going to be like that good.
Right, because then he would be super well-rounded because of how good he is defensively.
Oh, yeah, no, if the bat keeps up, all of a sudden he's extremely, like, he could bust in the top five, but I don't see it continuing to be a 116 WRC plus for the rest of his career.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree. All right, moving on to what, number nine on our list? Yeah, number nine.
Yep.
A guy, yet again, a guy I've been a fan of, but also I'm just a fan of this team in general, and that is Bo Bichette. So I do have to mention, he's not here to defend himself, but Ryan is the biggest Bo Bichette / Toronto Blue Jays hater ever. So Bo Bichette was almost like in danger of missing this list because of Ryan just not ranking.
Solely.
But again, this is another guy I firmly have in my top, top 10 for sure. And he led the league in hits last year. Did he not? All right. So
yeah, that sounds about right, considering he swings away a lot. So
dumb question.
That can make sense.
Dumb question. I have like, we're recording at like 9:30. So my brain is about shot at this point. Baseball reference page. When a number is bolded, he led the league, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
He led the league in hits in 2021 and 2022.
Definitively, we know now.
He led the league in hits. He had 191 in 2021, or 189 in 2022. So 2 years in a row leading league in hits. Does swing away a lot, but his on-base percentage is still super solid, more than serviceable. 343 in 2021, 333 in 2022. Ryan likes to argue that 2021, the numbers are skewed because of how often the Blue Jays played down in that minor league park in Florida. Obviously, playing in a minor league park in warmer climate is going to be a lot different than playing in a dome in Toronto. And that's fair. I'll concede that point. But like, it's not as if his 2022 numbers were drastically different. Yeah, they were down a little bit, but it was within reason of what you would expect if you played half your season in a minor league park.
Compared
Florida.
To league average, he was better than 21.
Fair. But I think Bo Bichette is super solid. Like, we kind of doesn't get talked about because he was kind of the first young shortstop to come up, and now you're seeing other guys. Obviously, Tatis came up around the same time, but like really took the league by storm. And now you're getting Wander Franco and some of these other guys. And obviously the top four have always been the top four, with Correa and Turner and Lindor and Bogarts and whatnot. But Bo Bichette, super solid. And I just don't get the hate personally. And honestly, I feel like number nine is even too low for him. But that just goes to show how deep this position is across baseball. I would put him ahead of Dansby Swanson. I believe I had him ahead of Tim Anderson too, and I like Tim Anderson. I was just on here defending Tim Anderson, but it just goes to show how high I am on Bo Bichette. I don't know that he's ever going to have a 930 OPS like he did his rookie year. I mean, granted, his rookie year was only 46 games. I don't think he's ever going to be a 900 OPS guy, but he doesn't have to be like as good as I think he is.
Just admit it. It's the hair.
Honestly,
Bo Bichette.
If you have cheddar, I'm going, if you have lettuce, whatever you know, food term you want to use for it, yeah, I'm going to root for you. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So,
unless you're Dansby Swanson.
Yeah. No, no former Braves allowed. But I'm glad we got that point out of you. But, anyways, yeah, no, but Bichette, there are definitely things you can nitpick about his game, but he basically had the same season in 22 that he had in 21. And that's a damn good hitting season. And the thing about Bichette is he's only 25. So you could see him even improve. Maybe he starts taking more walks. Maybe he becomes a little bit more consistent and less streaky throughout the season. Maybe his defense improves. That's a big sticking point with Bichette, is that his defense is kind of weak compared to other shortstops. But if, you know, if he can figure that out, maybe they end up moving him somewhere else to a position where he's better. I don't know. But he's got plenty of time to improve as a ball player. And if he stays as good as he is right now, he's still pretty damn good. He's a free swinger, so you're not going to get many walks out of him, but he's going to hit for power and he's going to get a lot of base hits. So realistically, I think he's only going to go up from here, if anything. Mm-hmm. If this is the player he is, that's also fine. So I'm still a big fan of Bichette. I think he'll be fine going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very glad you're in agreement, because a little tired right now, didn't have it in me to like go to war over Beau Bichette, but like that's something instinctively I would want to do. So I'm glad I didn't have to fight today.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely you can point out some, he's got some flaws as does most players, but
as most 24 year olds do.
Yeah, I think the only thing with Bichette that you could maybe really argue is this sustainable for a long time, because he doesn't walk, but he did it the last two seasons, so no reason to really believe that he can't do it again.
Exactly. 100%. All right, rounding out our top 10 shortstops in baseball is a guy we previously mentioned. That is Wander Franco. I mean, you talk about hitting ground running, and that's exactly what he did in 2021 when he made his debut. Like, they traded away, in my mind, a top 10 shortstop to bring up a top 10 shortstop.
Yep, exactly.
And then the Rays, who never pay anyone, they extended their franchise young guy for, I don't remember exactly what that deal was. It was over a decade.
It was 10 for one. I can pull it up. Or something.
Yeah, I can pull it up. But like, if the Rays are identifying, like the Rays have had really good players over the years, and if they identify that early and pay you, you're very good. And he hasn't even scratched the surface of what he could be. You know, we mentioned Beau Bichette being so young. So is Wander Franco. He's only entering his age 22 season.
It's like, I feel like every dude on this list is just
young. And
I mean, who's the oldest? Freaking Bogarts, Correa?
Bogarts.
They're like 30.
30, yeah.
So that's like Anderson's not, that's not old.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
crazy stuff.
But yeah, Wander Franco, I mean, hot start. Cooled off a little bit last year, but he was also injured last year. So I think age 22, which sounds so silly, but it's his third year in the league. Hopefully the health, you know, is good now. I don't really know what to expect, to be honest. Baseball Reference has him at a 778 OPS, which would be fine. But I also think we could see him blow the doors off and just have an insane season. So, like, I don't know what to say about him other than I feel like he could be really, really good. Like, just my super in-depth analysis on Wander Franco, I think he could be really, really good.
All right, Mad Dog, calm down there. Anyways, yeah, no, but it is funny, though, because you're right. We don't know what this guy is yet because he hasn't played a full season. But at the same time, if the Rays are going to pay you, but there's not really any reason to doubt their player development and like their analytics department and what they know, because they just keep bringing random guys up that you never heard of and they can become good players. How about this guy who's actually a big name and they paid him? So we all see the talent. He needs to put it together for a full season. I think he's totally capable of that as long as health isn't a factor. So, yeah, I mean, even when he did play last year, he was still really good. So that's still encouraging. So let's just see it extrapolated over a full year. And then he'll probably just be a top 10 shortstop for the rest of his life. But at the same time, you're right. He could blow the doors off of this. We really don't know. He could be an MVP for all we know, because that's kind of the hype that this guy has gotten since he came up. So really, just please stay healthy, man. I want to watch this guy play all season. Let's go.
Yeah, for real. I mean, we could say that about several people on this list.
Yeah, for real.
For sure. But yeah, I think Wander Franco will be a guy that rises up this list, not falls out of the top 10 as we go on to next year and the year after that and so on and so forth. But just to recap our top 10, number one, Trey Turner, two, Lindor, three, Correa, four, Xander Bogaerts, five, Corey Seager, six, Willy Adames, seven, Tim Anderson, eight, Dansby Swanson, nine, Beau Bichette, and 10, Wander Franco. I'm sure you have some honorable mentions. Is there anyone you wanted to give a shout out to?
Tommy Edman.
Yep.
Who should be on this list?
I figure that's where you're going.
But
talk first and I'll give a slight counterpoint, but I don't entirely disagree with you.
Okay. That's, yeah. I mean, I think you have him listed basically as 11. So I can't be that upset, but yeah, this guy, I feel like we really need to be paying more attention to the base running and defense with some of these middle infielders positions that have become, you know, you're seeing guys that can hit really well from those positions. And that's kind of a newer thing if you think about the history of baseball. But I mean, Tommy Edman, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that hits that well. I'm pretty sure he's going to be from anywhere from slightly below league average to slightly above league average. But his versatility and his defense and what he does on the bases, that's simply enough to be in this list. Now, granted, he could be considered a utility guy. He actually played more second base than shortstop last year. So that's definitely something to consider as well. But I'm pretty sure this year he's slotted to be their starting shortstop every day. But you never know with the Cardinals. They seem to just kind of run a dude out there and he ends up being really good. So we'll have to see what they end up doing with him, if he ends up being a utility guy or not. But if we're counting him as a shortstop, either way, I think he should be on the list. But yeah, that was my one gripe with this list for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned it, so you're already kind of poking holes in my counter argument. I would view him to this point as a utility guy, and if we're talking utility guys, he's probably number one or number two.
No, that's totally fair.
This guy, I'm like low key becoming a Jake Cronenworth hater just because I constantly have to like mention it, and I don't have anything against Jake Cronenworth. Tommy Edman is better than Jake Cronenworth.
As a utility guy, I'm gonna 100% agree.
Yeah, like but Cronenworth has the All-Star games and plays Diego.
Yeah.
So it's like, but if you're
Edman really gets lost diving, in the shuffle, there's right. just other guys there that are more of a headline, and he's even more lost in the shuffle now that Contreras enters the mix. So
right.
But definitely pay attention to what this dude's doing, because I mean, he's pure electricity out there.
Yeah. So I have no issues with Tommy Edman, but one, I want to see a full season at shortstop. I think he'll be fine. But two, like, this is one of the situations where tier-based rankings are a little bit easier.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because he probably is in the same tier as some of the guys that are like 8 through 10, you know, in a lot of lists. But I wouldn't put him in the top 10. Obviously, I didn't. So obviously, I wouldn't put him in the top 10. Because, like, a league average hitter is fine. But it's fine. You know, it's not like great. It's not, if you can easily be replaced, if your team can easily find a player to improve the position, you're not top 10 in my mind. And maybe it's not easy to replace like all the other stuff he brings to the table, but it's very easy, relatively easy to find a better offensive shortstop than Tommy Edman. And I think that's the one thing holding him back in the top 10. Not that he's not good, not that he needs to be replaced. I just think that's the one thing that's holding him back, because I agree with you. I think he's just going to be a league average hitter, hunt around 100 OPS plus, around a 730 to 750 OPS. Both fine numbers, but again, not top 10 in my mind.
All right, that's fair. You got any honorable mentions yourself?
No.
There are definitely other guys. Like, yeah. we should say, like, but we just don't want to take. We're already probably going way too long. So
we're not doing too bad. But
are we pitch clocked? Is that what's going on?
No, not pitch
clocked. Oh, okay.
Gosh, that's a whole different discussion.
I love. I'm not making fun of the pitch clock. By the way,
I have a love hate relationship with the pitch clock.
But, yeah, I'm into it. There's definitely some things they could fix, but I'm into it so far.
Yeah, yeah.
That's for another.
Okay. Yeah, it needs to be tweaked. I'll just
they can definitely make some fixes.
Yeah. No, I don't really have any honorable mentions. I like that you included Tommy Edman. Just trying to think off the top of my head. No, because like my top 10 made it to the top 10, so I didn't think too hard about
mentions. Freaking Jeremy Pena. I mean, in the regular season last year, wasn't the top 10, but
I don't have him anywhere close to my top 10.
I'm just gonna shout out his playoff run.
Fair.
And I'm also gonna shout out freaking Elvis Andrews, who had a sneaky good year last year.
He did.
When I was looking at the leaderboards here, I was like, oh wow, Elvis Andrews, freaking 3.35 F WAR, 105 WRC plus, good defense, good on the bases. What's up with that?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But I wouldn't put him on the list, but he had a good year. Good for him.
Yeah. So that does it for our top 10 shortstops in baseball. Our next episode of the series will be tackling the third baseman, which is a very similar discussion because it's very top heavy, but the depth is there. So it'll be a good discussion with a lot of superstar talent at the position. But in the meantime, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Half Street High Heat for all the latest news and all of the content we post. Follow Trey at Reverse 2 R's 2 S's and check out the YouTube channel. Search Half Street High Heat. Don't backslash Half Street High Heat. Apparently that does not work. So
I'll figure that out.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. We appreciate listening again. We will see you next time for Third Baseman. But in the meantime, spring training is going on, so let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go Nats, we're gonna score for score, we're gonna win for sure. So call your local congressman, we need another monument. The Nats are rolling on the win roll, D.C. Let's go Nats.
By the early light of dawn, well you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book.
Let's go Nats, we've got a game to play, we're gonna win today. Let's go Nats, we're gonna score for score, we're gonna win for sure. You better tell your senator we're shredding the competitors, we're set to send the pennant home for old D.C. Let's go Nats, let's go Nats, let's go Nats, let's go Nats,
let's go Nats.
So race and tell the president we hold this truth self-evident. The Nats are gonna represent Virginia up to Maryland and old D.C.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.